An alleyway in hell, China's black jails. That's by Sophie Richardson of Human Rights Watch. Today, we're very glad to welcome Barry Chung, chairman of the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange. Barry's very well known around town, of course. After doing university in the UK, he went to my home, Boston, to do business school at Harvard, and stayed on the US for about 10 years. That job brought, he was working as a consultant with McKinsey & Company, and today, as you know, he's living every consultant's dream. He's actually getting to do stuff in all sorts of various capacities, as head of the Urban Renewal Authority, Standing Committee on Disciplined Services, Salaries, and Conditions of Service. And he was also with the Central Policy Unit for a while. Now, this range of public service does have its downsides. Barry was recently invited to a gallery opening, something that us normal civilians can do on a fairly regular basis. But then the gallery mentioned that he would be there in its press release. And the next thing, his office was inundated with journalist phone calls, wanting to confirm he was there because they wanted to ask him about the government's land price policy. And Barry was not able to go to the event. But Barry, you're not going to be able to avoid the journalist so easily today. Barry was also up at very early this morning. He had to talk for 80 minutes, beginning at 7:50 in the morning, to a class of sociology students on urban renewal issues. He's promised us he's not going to talk for 80 minutes today. He will talk to us for about 15 or 20 minutes before the usual Q&A on China's commodities trading boom and Hong Kong's role. Barry, thank you for coming to the FCC.
I was up at the crack of dawn today, going to the Hong Kong International School to talk to the sociology class. I have to say, it comes as a relief to be speaking now to an audience that's more friendly and less cynical. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very happy to be speaking to you today as we gear up to launch our initial contracts on the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange in the first quarter of next year. I want to thank Tom for the invitation and for the for inviting me. I actually have a souvenir for you, which I will give to you later. And you will like it. It's a gold bar. Well, it is with great pleasure that I will provide an overview of China's growing influence in international commodities trading and Hong Kong's role within that process. I want to speak for about 10 to 12 minutes, and then perhaps we can leave some time for questions. I'd like to first address the question of why there's a need for a commodity exchange with international participation in Asia, and then explain why Hong Kong is the best place to put it. Third and last, I will describe to you what we at the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange are doing to ensure success for our customers, our shareholders, for Hong Kong and the greater region. Over the past decade or so, exchanges around the world have demutualized and consolidated. Markets are better connected than ever before, and that means electronic trading technology is more than ever driving exchanges and traders' business models. The time has come for a globally connected trading platform offering regional commodity products in Asia. We are all well aware of China's insatiable demand for commodities and its role as a leading global commodities processor. China consumes over half of the world's iron ore, 40% of the world's cotton, 1/3 of the world's copper, and 10% of the world's oil. Less well known is that China's gold reserves have nearly doubled to 1,000 metric tons in the past 6 years. The growth rate of China's consumption is even more impressive. In the past few years, for example, China has accounted for about 90% of the increase in demand for nickel and half of the increase in demand for copper and aluminum. If you look at the demand for lead and zinc, China accounted for more than 100% of the increase in demand for these metals. Everywhere else in the world, demand for lead and zinc fell, but China's increase in demand was more than enough to offset decline in the rest of the world. China now occupies the central role in the demand for commodities and the future evolution of the commodities markets. But we sometimes overlook China isn't alone in having a voracious hunger for commodities. If you look at the slide behind me, you can see that the rest of Asia has contributed heavily to shifting commodity trade flows in an easterly direction. Now, let's see where these commodities are actually traded. This slide takes the example of gold. Look at the contrast. The greatest demand is here in Asia, but price discovery is taking place halfway around the world. This situation is clearly not satisfactory to Asian investors and market users. In fact, the numbers shown on the slide are actually giving a bit too much weight to Asia. If you look at the exchange trading, because the numbers here shows 35% of that takes place in Asia, but in fact it's less because it includes the Shanghai Futures Exchange volume, which is in a closed market and it's really not apples with apples. But if you were to take the Shanghai Futures Exchange volume away, Asia exchange trading is probably less than 10%. There are further problems too. Asian investors have little say in how commodity contracts on foreign exchanges are designed. The bulk of trading takes place in the hours when we are asleep on exchanges very far away, and often tied to contract specifications, which expose them to commodity grades and delivery points which are unsuitable to their underlying commercial and hedging needs. Asia needs a transparent pricing platform in this time zone, for the commodities of which we are the biggest consumers. There's no commodities market in Asia today with the stature of London or New York or Chicago. This is a market inefficiency which someone somewhere is going to feel, as the status quo is incompatible to the changing balance of economic power from west to east. This brings me to the second point I'd like to make today. Why is Hong Kong well positioned to become the major Asian center for international commodities trading? I looked at this question from a number of key perspectives. First, that of the financial and commercial players in Hong Kong. Hong Kong, as we know, has a long history as a mercantile center, not only as a center of commerce and trade finance, but also as an international trading hub. This diverse set of market actors will be among the most important market participants on the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange. Second, from the perspective of China's fast-growing financial institutions, many of them are looking abroad for growth opportunities to broaden their businesses and to improve their risk management expertise and capabilities, both domestically and globally. Hong Kong is ideally placed to fulfill these ambitions in a controlled and sustainable manner. Third, there are big commodity consumers and processors in China and in other Asian economies with growing industries. they have a natural need to hedge their commodity exposures closer to home and more efficiently than they can in the European or North American markets. In due course, we see China's trading partners from South America, the Middle East, and other major markets being drawn to use the Asian markets. So what does Hong Kong offer these very different constituencies? It has rule of law based on international standards. International standards, whether in contract design, in dispute resolution, and in just about every aspect of international trade and finance, are the norm wherever you go. As an international financial center, Hong Kong offers world-class expertise, talent, and experience. Crucially, Hong Kong has one of the most respected regulatory regimes in the world. The Securities and Futures Commission and the Hong Kong Monetary Authority are among the most highly regarded regulatory institutions in the world. Hong Kong's payment systems are among the safest and most efficient in the world and are at the forefront of integrating with their mainland equivalents. Hong Kong has been consistently rated as the world's freest economy on the basis of its business infrastructure, financial, legal, and professional services, and its low and simple tax rates. In addition, the city offers a comprehensive intellectual property rights framework and the free flow of capital and goods. Befitting Hong Kong's status as a leading international financial center, the city's workforce has a heavy concentration of financial sector professionals and deep risk management expertise. Its labor infrastructure is well up to the task. As a major financial center, Hong Kong is also blessed with deep and diverse domestic and international pools of capital and liquidity, which are permanently seeking new markets for investment and trade. Commodities have arrived as an essential asset class in investment portfolios. Given China's importance to the commodities markets, I am confident that a substantial amount of cross-border trading in commodity derivatives will occur in Hong Kong. In the future, Hong Kong will solidify its role as the leading international financial center for renminbi trade finance, following the recent success of the pilot cross-border trade settlement program. At the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange, we are going to roll out a number of contracts in the coming months. We will offer contracts in precious metals, base metals, energy, and so on, through the commodities spectrum. Our first contract will be gold. The fundamentals of global gold flows have changed. China is now the world's largest producer, and yet its appetite is such that it imports gold, and 70% of those imports pass through Hong Kong. In no small part because Hong Kong has long been a major global trading center along with London and New York. Earlier I mentioned China's near doubling of gold reserves over the past few years. Other national authorities are even now increasing their own gold reserves. The notion that central banks are increasingly tempted to diversify away from US dollar assets like treasury bonds is gaining wide acceptance. This is one factor in recent price gains for gold. It touched $1,100 an ounce on Friday. This is happening despite a 20% decline in jewelry demand for gold in the second quarter. Interestingly enough, even as jewelry demand tumbled worldwide, it rose 6% in China. As you can by now tell, we are planning for a lot of commodities trading to take place on the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange. We have prepared well. The exchange is run by first-class professionals who have global experience in both commodity trading and exchange management. Our systems testing results tell us that our trading, clearing, and settlement technology offers the highest security, scalability, strongest reliability, and the lowest latency among major markets. I expect you to remember this, John. These are crucial advantages. As you can see on the slide behind me, our performance testing shows us that our Pearl trading system is among the fastest in the world. Our latency of 2.3 milliseconds means a market order spends the shortest possible time inside our trading engine. This can be a crucial advantage for high frequency and algo traders and those who trade with them and have an increasing role in the position of market liquidity. Security and reliability are likewise at the forefront of technology. The Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange aims to offer the highest reliability to market participants trading on it, using the hot dual data centers. This permits systems to keep running even if a crucial part or subsystem fails. Any failing subassembly has its load taken up smoothly and seamlessly by its counterpart in the other data center. And this is all invisible to the market. All this world-beating technology is worth little if we cannot deliver a product that the market wants. The exchange offers products tailored to the market's specific needs. In the example of our first contract, we will trade gold and price it in troy ounces, which is the global standard, but we will deliver it in kilo bars, which is the standard in Asia. The hybrid troy ounce kilo design of our gold contract is a product of the exchange system of close consultation with market participants in the design of our contracts. Our precious metals advisory committee, for example, has representatives from major international and mainland traders to ensure that we develop a standardized product that the market needs. We are also offering physical delivery here in Hong Kong. Physical delivery for gold is a prerequisite to a functional commodity futures contract. Because our gold futures contract expires into a physical obligation, it ensures that the futures converge with the cash market. This is what customers have told us they want. Delivery will initially be offered at the precious metals depository at the Hong Kong International Airport. Customers may also elect to take delivery in other financial centers around the world. This will help us meet the needs of those investors who require physical delivery outside Hong Kong. In due course, we also hope to be able to offer mainland delivery in a broad range of commodities at strategic delivery points. We have a very strong ethos at the Hong Kong Merc, focus on the customer. Our member feedback tells us we are on the right track, giving market participants what they need to trade major commodities in the Asia time zone. Our customer focus means we offer long trading hours, a 15-hour trading day, from 8 a.m. in the morning to 11 p.m. at night. Our trading will open at the same time as TOCOM and encompasses the LBMA, AM, and PM fixes, as well as the COMEX open. In this way, we are bridging the European and North American trading days to ensure that our market participants can get the best price possible. Mainland players can also identify and take advantage of arbitrage opportunities between the domestic and international markets via our trading platform in Hong Kong to the mutual benefit of both markets. Keeping us in check to make sure that we don't put a foot wrong is a very strong board of directors. Our shareholders have sent us their most senior executives, while we have a large contingent of independent non-executive directors to offer unbiased guidance. Apart from the strong presence of independent directors, our board is geographically diverse, with representation from the mainland, from Hong Kong, from the rest of Asia, and from Western institutions. Though we're still young, it's not too early for me to see that the exchange is benefiting enormously from our board's diversity. A strong board is a leading factor in ensuring that all our stakeholders get maximum value from the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange, from shareholders to staff to customers and on to the wider community. With regard to corporate governance, we're aiming at the higher standards. And why are we doing this? Because we believe that a strong ethos of corporate responsibility serves the Hong Kong Merc's long-term interests and those of our stakeholders. Let me sum up so we can move on to a few questions. The Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange, like Hong Kong itself, seeks to become the bridge linking the international investor community to China. We emphasize TLC as being the key ingredients for success: transparency, liquidity, and clearing. The Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange has its management and staff in place. Taken together, we have decades of financial market experience to bring to our new venture. Our technology is built and tested, and it looks to be among the world's best in terms of latency, reliability, and security. We have a clearing arrangement with LCH ClearNet, the world's leading independent clearinghouse in both exchange-traded and OTC clearing, and is underpinned by risk management resources and capabilities which cannot currently be matched in Asia. Our membership drive is making excellent progress, with active signing up of the diverse set of market players required to generate sufficient early liquidity. And our license application to the Securities and Futures Commission is in its final stages. We see a very warm reception for our first contract and are very hopeful for similar debuts for our follow-up contracts, like silver, copper, and other metals and energy products. I believe that these factors, along with a little foresight, a lot of hard work, and perhaps a small bit of luck, will help us reach our goal. I foresee Hong Kong establishing benchmark pricing for key commodities in the Asian time zone. I foresee Hong Kong offering a venue where international and domestic participants in the commodities market can meet on a level playing field. And I foresee Hong Kong providing mainland commodities consumers and investors with the means to manage risk safely. Thank you very much for listening to me. And if there's some time, I'm prepared to take some questions. Thank you very much.
Barry, thank you very much. We do have about 20 minutes for questions, but first things first, can I have the gold bar? Now?
Oh, yes.
No. I'm joking.
If I forget.
Barry, I wasn't going to forget, trust me.
Okay.
All right. It's not often you witness collusion when it's happening, huh?
Yeah,
we'll show it. Take it out.
Take it out.
Yeah, take it out. In London and in New York, they trade the 100 and 400 ounces gold bars, which is substantially bigger than this one. But in Asia, the industry deals in kilo bars. And it's no more than a bar of chocolate. And this is worth about $35,000. Not this one. Don't sell it, Tom.
All right. I think we may have to report this. anybody want to be president? Barry, can we start with me asking the first question? Could you just tell us a little bit about who is behind Hong Kong Merc and its genesis? Who are the shareholders? How did it come about? What kind of computer infrastructure do you have in place? How many employees do you have?
I can answer some of these questions, and the other questions I will have to defer until probably the end of the month, when we will make an announcement for our exact composition of shareholders and board members. In terms of the origin, if you remember, sometime in 2006, the chief executive at the time announced that in order to diversify Hong Kong's financial services offerings, Hong Kong should try to develop other financial services. And he listed commodities exchange trading as one of them, together with, I think, Islamic finance and so forth. So in the fall of 2006, we presented a proposal to the government to set up a commodities exchange. And the government received the proposal with a lot of enthusiasm, and we were encouraged to start setting it up, and we have been doing ever since. Of course, the preparation really went into gear when we announced the formation of it last year in June. Now, the shareholders we will in the press conference that we are planning, we will announce the respective shareholders and their holdings and so forth. But today, what I will say is that basically it's a very interesting shareholding structure. We have about 40-45% of the exchange being held by a small number of very influential Chinese state-owned companies. And then the rest is divided between Hong Kong and other international investors. The Western investors will include some of the biggest players in the commodities trading business. In terms of directors, we basically have three types. We have directors appointed by the shareholders that have 10%. They get to appoint one director each. So they're appointing the most senior people. And then we have a large number of independent directors unconnected to the exchange. We have some prominent people from Hong Kong and from the mainland. In Hong Kong, we have people like Raymond Chin, chairman of Hang Seng Bank and MTRC, Christine Low, who is a frequent visitor to this venue. We have Professor Richard Wong, number two at the Hong Kong University. We have Dominic Ho, the past chairman of KPMG. We also have two mainland INEDs. We have Fan Gang, who is a very famous economist on the mainland and advisor to the Prime Minister. We have Kang Dian, who is chairman of the supervisory board of the Shenzhen Development Bank. So we have a large number of these people. In terms of management, currently we have about 60-65 people, and we'll be adding another 20 in the next 3 months. The 60 or so people come from 15 countries. Our senior management is truly international, with people from the US, from Europe. And in fact, and our president used to be the former deputy chairman of NYMEX. We have a senior advisor who used to be head of planning and strategy at the London Stock Exchange. And our general counsel used to be general counsel of the Chicago Climate Exchange. And then our CEO of technologies and operation has spent 25 years providing trading and clearing services to financial institutions. So we have a large number of very experienced people. But that's because we wanted to make sure we provide a very high quality international platform for our customers.
Questions from the floor, and please, journalists against the wall, don't be shy either. Right up here in front. And please do identify yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Zheng, for your time today. My name is James Pike. I have just one question. You described the exchange as trading in U.S. dollars, at least for gold. Can you give us some idea how a typical mainland company, Yuan or Renminbi based, would deal with currency exchange controls to actually fund and trade on the exchange?
Well, when mainland customers trade on international exchanges, whether it's gold or copper or other products, they trade in US dollars. So it is the reason why you have to trade in US dollars is because the physical trade is being conducted in US dollars. So for people to be able to hedge their positions, you want an underlying contract that reflects the physical trade. And that's why, you know, our contracts come with physical delivery. If you're asking how mainland customers are able to trade on international exchanges, there are many channels. Some use officially approved channels, some have other channels, they have offshore companies that they use to trade. There are a million ways. If you look at the stock trading volume today in Hong Kong, I would think that mainland customers account for a decent slice of that trading volume. And if you ask them how did they get to Hong Kong to trade, I have seen customers who are trading stocks in Hong Kong sitting at a terminal on the mainland. But they through via their accounts in Hong Kong. So there are many ways for mainland customers to trade in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. Francis.
Yeah, two very quick questions. When exactly do you think you'll be in business? Do you have a target date? And secondly, can you see, would carbon trading, for example, be handled under the Mercantile Exchange?
Well, we are shooting to do it in early first quarter. Hopefully we can do it sometime in January. But we don't have a fixed day because it's taking a little bit of time to connect to customers. The bigger the banks are, the longer it takes to hook up with them. So we want to be able to hook up with a fair number of them before we start trading. Regarding carbon trading, our attitude is really we take a wait and see kind of attitude. We're looking at this development of the market with interest, but there are a lot of uncertainties in the trading of carbon emission. And there's tremendous amount of government intervention, and it just never bodes well for markets because things can change by government edicts. And given the uncertain outcome from this discussion in Copenhagen coming up soon, I'm not sure how this market would play out. But you know, if the direction becomes clearer, obviously we'll be interested to look at it.
John, you had one.
As you know, I'm interested in all things old, and there's a lovely old trading floor in Shengwan, the old gold exchange, and of course, Hong Kong's got a history of gold trading for probably since it started. Will the old gold exchange be absorbed into your mercantile exchange, or will it be a rival?
The gold and silver exchange is a cash market. Ours is a futures market. They really are not the same thing. I would say they complement each other. I have had good discussions with the gold and silver exchange. The point that I made to them was the establishment of the Hong Kong Mercantile Exchange will attract additional liquidity to Hong Kong. And that will only be good for everybody else, for all the other players that in the gold business, including the cash market. There are people who are setting up gold ETFs in Hong Kong, and that's a wonderful thing, because I think in order to attract additional liquidity, you need a wide range of products. And there is no, you know, we're not in a competitive situation with the gold and silver exchange. In fact, I think there's a good possibility that if we bring a lot of liquidity to the market, they will benefit from it.
Question right up front, please. microphone's coming.
Hi, Barry. I'm Deborah Mao with Bloomberg News. Speaking of competition, I think the Hong Kong Exchange already offers gold trading and has been offering since October of 2008. How do you plan, or what would you say would be different about trading on the Hong Kong Merc?
I would say everything. The contract that we are planning to offer is completely different. This is a true commodities futures contract with physical delivery. It sets the price for gold. I think the what the exchange, the stock exchange offers is an sort of an index contract based on, if I believe, is London's gold, the closing price for gold. So it's not quite the same thing. It's very different, actually. So our contract is designed to meet the needs of the actual industry participants, i.e. the gold traders, people who trade, you know, the big banks, they trade a lot of gold, physical gold, and they need this kind of contracts to hedge their risk. So I, you know, what I'm saying is that it's you know, apples and oranges.
Okay. Sorry, Tom Holland in the back, and then we will come back to you. Sorry.
Oh, hi, Barry. Tom Holland from the South China Morning Post. You will be going up against the big boys, COMEX, and the London market in offering your contract. Now, experience has shown that what clients want above all in a contract is liquidity. And the liquidity, as you said, is in London and New York, with almost all the price discovery happening there. Now, experience with futures exchange offering similar contracts in the past has shown that the only way a startup exchange wins business away from established pools of liquidity is by deeply undercutting them on price. So are you going to be a lot cheaper, and are you going to compete on price, and how much cheaper are you going to be?
Tom, before I answer your question, let me address the premise of your question. You say the current liquidity exists in London and New York, of course, because we haven't had any offerings here in Asia. It reminds me of this discussion I had many years ago with the oil companies in Hong Kong, and the question was, why don't you offer 93 unleaded petrol, because it was cheapest and meet all the requirements? And the response was, but there's no demand in Hong Kong. And you say, well, there's no demand because you haven't offered it. It's a very interesting question. Actually, I think, several things, points I want to make. The first is, our existence doesn't mean taking away volume from those established exchanges, because I think experience tells us, particularly when ICE was formed more than 10 years ago, offering an identical contract, the result was volumes on both exchanges went up, because it gave people an opportunity to arbitrage price differences between the exchanges. Now, obviously, we are offering something different. We're offering a product that is tailor-made to suit the needs of Asian customers. And based on, you know, what we've been told by these very big traders in gold, they like what we are offering. In fact, we're offering what they told us to offer. So the level of interest is very high, and the level of interest is highest among mainland customers. They would love to trade on this platform. And so I don't think we should compete on price, but we are quite confident that we'll be very cost efficient.
Come back to the middle, please.
I believe Singapore, Cymex already offers some kind of contract we can roll over into Chicago exchanges. And they have not been that successful, I believe. So what's your difference between them and you in this time exchange? The other question I have is, I'm sure really China really wants the commodity futures exchange, which determines cash prices. Even in the US, where, you know, there's a which invented the modern commodity futures exchange, there's some concern that it doesn't reflect real supply demand, for example, the oil prices. And China, which is the biggest consumer of a lot of commodities, including foodstuff, would they like to see a situation where paper shuffling determines the prices rather than, you know, supply-demand considerations?
Okay. I heard two questions. So the first one, the SIMEX one, I think earlier there was some announcement about introducing a gold product, but without physical delivery. I mean, that's the big difference. And it doesn't set the price for gold in Singapore. So again, it's an index-based contract. It's not really a real commodities futures contract. It also, if I read correctly, it was intended to give retail punters an opportunity to trade gold. So it's a very different product altogether. Our product is aimed at people who actually trade physical gold in large quantities. The second question about whether China wants to see paper shoveling. Let me put it this way. The commodities that China imports a great deal, whether it's copper, it's gold, or oil, the prices are being set on other exchanges halfway around the world. I don't think it can be worse than the current situation if we somehow were able to bring price discovery back to this time zone. It cannot be worse than where things are now. So I think if we are able to do that, and we are able to set the benchmark prices for some of this commodity, it can only be a good thing from a risk management standpoint. You know, if you, again, my earlier point about needing a contract that reflects as accurately as possible the physical trade in order to hedge your position. At the moment, you use proxies in Asia because we have very few contracts that actually reflect the physical trade. What we're trying to do is to introduce contracts that reflect much better than what exists currently on Western exchanges.
Happy to take one last question if there is one, although we are right up against time. Yeah, I see the spy from Hong Kong Exchanges and Clearing, Scott Sapp, busily taking notes. No questions? All right. Well, Barry, thank you very much for talking in so much detail about this very interesting initiative. Please join me in thanking Barry for coming in and talking to us today. And as we do, we have a gift for you. In return for your gold, we have a bag of coal. Thank you very much.